Hercules, Chapter 1. The Babe Hercules. Far away in the land of Argos there once lived a beautiful maiden, the daughter of a brave king. She was tall and fair, and her name was Alcmene. Her father was rich in the possession of many oxen. Her husband also owned great herds of oxen. He had so many that he could not tell them from those of the king. So he quarreled with the king and slew him. Then he took Alcmene and fled from his native land. They came to Thebes and made it their home. Here Hercules was born, the babe who was stronger than the strongest of men. The goddess Hera hated Hercules. She was the wife of Zeus, the lord of thunder and king of heaven. Hera was angry because Zeus loved him, and she was jealous because Zeus had foretold that Hercules would become the greatest of men. More than that, Zeus had deceived Hera and sent the infant Hercules to her to be nursed, that he might be made strong and godlike by tasting divine milk. So Hera sent two large snakes to devour the babe when she found out what child it was that she had fed. Hercules lay asleep in the great brazen shield which his father carried in battle, for he had no other cradle. The fearful serpents crept up with open mouths into the shield with the sleeping babe. As soon as Alcmene saw them, she was terribly frightened and called in a loud voice for help. His father, hearing the outcry of Alcmene, ran into the house with his sword drawn, and a great many warriors came with weapons in their hands. Hercules was only 8 months old. But before his father could reach him, he sat up in his bed and seized the serpents by their necks with his little hands. He squeezed and choked them with such force that they died. When Alcmene saw that the two snakes were dead and that Hercules was safe, she rejoiced greatly. But Hera's heart was filled with wrath, and she began to plan more mischief against the child. Hercules had his free will as long as he was a boy. His teachers were celebrated heroes who taught him boxing, wrestling, riding, and all kinds of games. He learned to read and write and to hurl the spear and shoot with bows and arrows. Linus taught him music. Hercules had a violent temper, and one day as Linus was teaching him to play the lute, the good teacher had reason to punish him. Hercules flew into a rage at this and struck Linus and killed him. Then his father sent him to the hills and left him to the care of herdsmen. The boy grew to be very large and strong. While he was yet a youth, he slew a lion of great size that had killed many of his father's cattle. He went home wearing the lion's skin as a sign of his victory. Because he was so brave, the king of Thebes gave his daughter to him in marriage, and he lived happily with her for many years. But a sudden insanity came upon him, during which he mistook his wife and children for wild beasts, and shot them down with his bow and arrows. When Hercules recovered from his insanity and saw what he had done, his grief was boundless. Chapter 2. Hercules is doomed to serve Eurystheus. The wrath of Hera followed Hercules. When Zeus saw that Hera's heart was filled with anger toward Hercules, he mused within his own mind how he might best appease her resentment and protect the young man. So he called the gods together in council, and they advised that Hercules be placed in bondage to his uncle Eurystheus, to serve him as a slave, and they ordained that he should perform 12 hard tasks, after which he would be numbered among the gods. Eurystheus was a mean fellow, stupid and cowardly. He was glad enough to have a chance to bully a man wiser and stronger than himself. He was born in Tiryns, a great fortress with many castles, built upon a large rock. But he had been made king of Argos, and lived in the capital, Mycenae. And he resolved to keep Hercules as far away from the kingdom as possible, for in his heart he was afraid of him. Hercules was grieved at being compelled to serve a man so much below him in strength and character, so he consulted the oracle at Delphi to see if there was any escape. But he did not murmur, for he was willing to obey the law of the gods. The oracle of Delphi was a mysterious influence, a divine spirit which expressed itself through a priestess living in a sacred temple. It was supposed to be the voice of the god Apollo, using this human agency for making known his will to men. The priestess became inspired to utter Apollo's holy laws by sitting on a golden tripod, or stool with three legs, over a chasm in the rock, from whence rose a sacred sulphurous vapor, which she breathed in as the breath of the god, and which caused her to breathe out his commands in wonderful sayings. The chasm from which the vapor issued was called the Chasm of the Oracle, and was in a large apartment or room in the temple. This celebrated temple had many columns of marble and splendid rooms made beautiful with thousands of marble statues. It stood on the side of Mount Parnassos, whose snow-covered head reaches into the clouds and looks down into the blue Gulf of Corinth below it to the south. It was here that Apollo killed the great dragon Pytho, which had been the scourge of the land for many years, and the grateful people built the temple in his honor. The oracle bade Hercules go forth to be the slave of Eurystheus, and so atone for all his sins, but it gave him as a compensation a dear friend, Iolaus, who was also his young nephew. Wherever Hercules went, Iolaus went with him and helped him. Chapter 3. The First Labor. The Nemean Lion. It happened that a fearful lion lived in Nemea, a wild district in Upper Argolis, and it devastated all the land and was the terror of the inhabitants. Eurystheus ordered Hercules to bring him the skin of this lion. So Hercules took his bow, his quiver, and heavy club and started out in search of the beast. When he had reached a little town, which is in the neighborhood of Nemea, he was kindly received by a good countryman, who promised to put him on the track of the lion, if he would sacrifice the animal to Zeus. Hercules promised, and the countryman went with him to show him the way. When they reached the place where traces of the lion were seen, Hercules said to his guide, "Remain here 30 days. If I return safely from the lion hunt, you must sacrifice a sheep to Zeus, for he is the god who will have saved me. But if I am slain by the lion, you must sacrifice the sheep to me, for after my death I shall be honored as a hero." Having said this, Hercules went his way. He reached the wilderness of Nemea, where he spent several days in looking for the lion, but without success. Not a trace of him could be found, nor did he fall in with any human being, for there was no one bold enough to wander around in that wilderness. Finally, he spied the lion as he was about to crawl into his den. The lion was indeed worthy of his terrible fame. His size was prodigious. His eyes shot forth flames of fire, and his tongue licked his bloody chops. When he roared, the whole desert resounded. But Hercules stood fearlessly near a grove from whence he might approach the lion, and suddenly shot at him with his bow and arrow, hitting him squarely in the breast. The arrow glanced aside, and slipping around the lion's neck, fell on a rock behind him. When Hercules saw this, he knew that the lion was proof against arrows and must be killed in some other way, and, seizing his club, he gave chase to him. The lion made for a cave which had two mouths. Hercules closed up one of the entrances with heavy rocks and entered the other. He seized the lion by the throat, and then came a terrible struggle. But Hercules squeezed him in his mighty arms until he gasped for breath, and at last lay dead. Then Hercules took up that huge body, and, throwing it easily over his shoulder, returned to the place where he had left the countryman. It was on the last of the 30 appointed days, and the rustic, supposing that Hercules had come to his death through the lion, was about to offer up a sheep as a sacrifice in his honor. He rejoiced greatly when he saw Hercules alive and victorious, and the sheep was offered up to Zeus. Hercules left the little town and went to Mycenae, to the house of his uncle, and showed him the dead body of the terrible lion. Eurystheus was so greatly frightened at the sight that he hid himself within a tower whose walls were built of solid brass. And he ordered Hercules not to enter the city again, but to stay outside of its gates until he had performed the other labors. Hercules stripped the skin from the lion with his fingers, although it was so tough, and knowing it to be arrow-proof, took it for a cloak and wore it as long as he lived. Chapter 4. The Second Labor. Hercules kills the water snake of Lake Lerna. Not far from Mycenae is a small lake called Lerna. It is formed from a large spring at the foot of a hill. In this lake there lived a water snake called the Hydra. It was a snake of uncommon size with 9 heads. 8 of the heads were mortal, but the one in the middle was immortal. The Hydra frequently came out of the water and swallowed up herds of cattle, laying waste the surrounding country. Eurystheus ordered Hercules to kill the snake, so he put on his lion skin and, taking his clubs, started out. He mounted his chariot and took his faithful friend Iolaus, who acted as a charioteer. Every warrior had to have a charioteer to drive the horses, leaving him free to use both of his hands. But driving was by no means the charioteer's only duty. He had also to look out for danger and protect the warrior with his shield, as well as to supply him with arrows from the quiver suspended at the side of every chariot, and with reserve spears when his own was broken in the fray. It is clear, therefore, that the warrior's life was entirely in the hands of his charioteer. So it is no wonder that only the hero's dearest and most trusted friends were allowed to serve him in this way. After driving along for a while, through groves of olive trees and past pleasant vineyards, they came to wild places and saw Lake Lerna gleaming through the trees. Having reached the lake, Hercules descended from the chariot, left the horses in care of Iolaus, and went to hunt for the snake. He found it in a swampy place where it was hiding. Hercules shot some burning arrows at the Hydra and forced it to come out. It darted furiously at him, but he met it fearlessly, put his foot upon its tail, and with his club began to strike off its heads. He could not accomplish anything in this way, for as fast as he knocked off one head, 2 others grew in its place. The snake coiled itself so firmly around one of Hercules' legs that he was no longer able to stir from the place. Added to all this, there came a huge crab to the assistance of the snake. It crept up to Hercules' foot, and seizing it with its sharp claws, inflicted painful wounds. Hercules killed the crab with his club and called Iolaus to help him. Under Hercules' direction, Iolaus produced a firebrand, which he applied to the neck as fast as Hercules cut off one of the snake's heads, in this way preventing them from growing again. Finally, it came the turn of the head, which could not die. Cutting it off, Hercules buried it in the ground, placing a heavy stone over it. Then he dipped some arrows into the Hydra's blood, which was poisonous, so that whoever was wounded by one of them could not be healed. The least scratch inflicted by such an arrow was incurable. Eurystheus, of course, had no word of praise for his great bondsman, but the people, knowing that the place was now safe, flocked to the land in great numbers and drained the lake, which was really not much more than a big marshy pond, and in their new homes they blessed the hero's name forever. That was the prize for which Hercules cared the most. If you should go today to that old battlefield of Hercules, you would still find the spring flowing from the rocks, but Lake Lerna exists only in story. Chapter 5. The Third Labor. The Golden-Horned Hind. The lower part of Greece is a most peculiar-looking bit of country. You would think it had been torn off from the bulk of the land, but kept hanging on to it by a small narrow strip. Then, too, its shape is so queer that it has been compared to all sorts of things, sometimes to a mulberry leaf, sometimes to an open hand. If we keep to the latter comparison, we will find that the part which answers to the palm of the hand is a large and intricate knot of high wooded mountains, which shoot out spurs in all directions. These spurs, with the land attached to them, stretch out into the sea as so many small peninsulas, and not badly represent the fingers of the hand. The central knot of mountains is even now different from the country all around. The people there are wilder, very much given to robbery and violence, and very slow to accept new ways of life or improvements of any kind. In the old heroic times of several thousand years ago, that country was simply an impassable wilderness. It was overcrowded with wild beasts, among which the bear must have been the most plentiful, since the land was named after him, Arcadia, a land of bears. Wolves were known also to abound. The men who had their villages in the narrow valleys by the mountain streams were fierce and lawless. There was nothing for them to do but to keep goats and hunt all day long. Arcadia was truly the paradise of hunters, and therefore held as specially sacred to the beautiful huntress, the goddess Artemis, the lady of the chase. She roamed over hills and valleys and through woods and groves by moonlight to protect the herds and flocks, this beautiful daughter of Zeus. In these same mountains of Arcadia there roamed a lovely hind sacred to Queen Artemis, who gave her golden horn so that she might be known from other deer by the huntsmen. Thus they might be saved from the crime of slaying what was sacred to the gods. Eurystheus ordered Hercules to bring him the hind alive, for he did not dare to have her killed. Hercules spent a whole year seeking her from the mountaintops down to the valleys, through tangles of brush over streams and in forests, but he was not able to catch her. After a long chase, he forced her at last to take refuge on the side of a mountain and from that place to go down to a river to drink. In order that he might prevent the deer from crossing the water, Hercules was obliged slightly to wound one of her legs. Not till then was he able to secure his game and carry it to Eurystheus. On his way to Mycenae, Hercules was met by Artemis, who upbraided him for having captured the hind belonging to her. Hercules made answer, "Great goddess, if I have chased and caught thy deer, I did it out of necessity, not impiety. For thou well knowest that the gods ordered me to be a servant to Eurystheus, and he commanded me to catch the hind." With these words he soothed the anger of the goddess and brought the golden-horned hind to Mycenae. Chapter 6. The Fourth Labor. The Erymanthian Boar. Elis is a beautiful plain lying to the north and west of Arcadia. Here once in 5 years there was a great festival in honor of Zeus, when all the men and boys ran races, wrestled, boxed, and played all sorts of games. Between Arcadia and Elis there is a high mountain range called Erymanthos. There a terrible boar had its lair. The boar frequently left its den and came down into the plains and killed cattle, destroyed fields of grain, and attacked people. Eurystheus, having heard of this boar, made up his mind that he wanted the beast alive, and so ordered Hercules to bring it to him. The hero put on his lion skin once more and started for the mountain. On his way, he stopped at a little town where the centaurs had their home. These strange people were half man and half horse. We have heard that they were really men, but such good riders that they seemed to be one with their mountain ponies. Their home was just on the edge of a high plain, covered with oak trees and looking down across a wild valley, through which flowed the Erymanthus River. There were many forests and little streams and dreadful gorges in the valley where these horsemen used to hunt and fish. The centaur chief, Pholos, received Hercules as a guest and gave him cooked meat to eat, while he ate it raw himself, after the centaur's custom. When Hercules had eaten his fill, he said to Pholos, "Thy food is indeed good and tasteful, but I should enjoy it still more if I could have a sip of wine, for I am very thirsty." To which Pholos replied, "My dear guest, we have very fine and fragrant wine in this mountain, and I should like nothing better than to give thee some of it. But I am afraid to do so, because it has a strong aroma, and the other centaurs, if they smelt it, might come to my cave and want some. They are very fierce and lawless, and might do thee great harm." "Let not that trouble thee," said Hercules. "I am not afraid of the centaurs." So the wine was placed before him, and he drank of it. In a little while a great noise was heard outside of the cave, a shouting of many wild voices and a stamping of many horses' feet. What Pholos feared had come to pass. The centaurs had smelt the fragrance of the wine, and in full armor had made for the cave of Pholos. Then began a terrible fight. The centaurs fell upon Hercules with pine branches, rocks, axes, and firebrands, and the clouds, their mothers, poured a flood of water on him. But Hercules was too clever for them. He put two to flight, prevented others from entering the cave, and shot the rest down with his arrows. Pholos was a kind-hearted chief, and hearing one of the centaurs crying for help outside of his cave, went out to him and tried to pull the arrow from his wound, wondering at the same time that so slight a weapon could cause his death. But the arrow slipped out of his hand and struck his own foot. It made only a scratch, but it could not be healed, for the arrow was one of those which Hercules had dipped in the blood of the Hydra, and poor Pholos breathed his last. The death of his kind host was a great sorrow to Hercules, for in those times when there was so little safety in traveling, the bond of kindness and gratitude between host and guest was one of the closest and most sacred, often more so than that between members of the same family. In all their later lives, host and guest could never meet as enemies, and if the chances of war brought them face to face as foes, they were not expected to fight. They exchanged greetings and gifts and drove off in different directions. Hercules, therefore, sincerely mourned his friend, performed over him the proper funeral rites, and buried him with all due honors in the side of the mountain. There he left him, sore at heart, but comforted by knowing that he had done all he could do to reconcile the shade of Pholos, and that his soul would bear him no grudge in spirit land. Then Hercules went on his way in search of the boar. He soon spied him in a dense thicket and chased him to the very top of the mountain. The mountain top was covered with deep snow, which prevented the boar from running fast enough to escape. So Hercules ran up to him, caught him in a net, threw him over his shoulder, and carried him off alive to Mycenae. It is said that Eurystheus hid himself in a large brazen bowl when he heard Hercules approaching the city, and that Hercules threw the boar into the same brazen bowl as the safest place in which to keep him. How astonished Eurystheus must have been to find himself in such terrible company! And we can fancy that he scrambled out with all possible haste. Chapter 7. The Fifth Labor. Hercules Cleans the Augean Stables. We have already read about Elis, a plain in the southwestern part of Greece, where all the people used to worship Zeus and where they built a wonderful temple in his honor. They built a temple to Hera, his wife, also, and many other temples which were filled with statues. What a fine time you would have if you could only go and see this beautiful land. Perhaps you will sometime. The temples are in ruins now, and they cover enough ground for a small town. The huge blocks of marble lie on the ground just as they fell, and there are the marble floors as people used to see them 2,000 years ago. There is a high hill close to the ruins. It is called the Mountain of Kronos, Old Father Time. Kronos is said to have been one of the early kings of Elise, and he was the father of Zeus. He swallowed up his children when they were babes, if we care to believe what is said of him, and the story could easily be true. For time swallows everything if he is only long enough about it. The strong men and the boys used to come to Elise to have athletic games in honor of Zeus. They ran races, they boxed, they shot arrows, and did all sorts of things to show how strong they were. There are two rivers at the foot of Mount Kronos, and beyond the rivers are many low hills where people used to sit and watch the games. There was at one time a king of Elise, Augeas, who was so rich in cattle that he hardly knew what to do with them, and consequently he built a stable miles long and drove his cows into it. He did this year after year, and the herds kept growing larger. He could not get men enough to take care of his stables, and the cows could hardly get into them on account of the filth. Or if they did get in, they were never sure of getting out again because the dirt was piled so high. Eurystheus thought he had found a disagreeable and impossible task for Hercules, and so he ordered him to clean out the stables in one day. Hercules told Augeas that he must clean the barns and promised to do it in one day if he would give him 1/10 of all his cows. The king thought Hercules would never be able to do it in one day and readily promised him, in the presence of his son, 1/10 of the cows. The king's stables were close to the two rivers near Mount Kronos. Hercules cut channels and sent the rivers running into the stables. They rushed along and carried the dirt out so quickly that the king was astonished. He did not intend to pay the promised reward and pretended that he never made any such promise. And he said he would have the matter come before a court and the judges should decide it. Then Hercules called the little prince as a witness before the judges, and the boy told the truth about it, which caused the king to fall into such a rage that he sent both his son and Hercules out of the country. Hercules left the land of Elise and went back to Mycenae, but his heart was filled with contempt for the faithless king. Chapter 8. The Sixth Labor. The Birds of Stymphalus. On the northern limit of Arcadia is a huge cliff, over which pours a black ribbon of water. At the bottom of the cliff it is lost among piles of rocks. The water itself is not black, but it appears so because the rock is covered with black moss, and so the stream is called the Styx, or black water. The Styx is icy cold, and it runs along under the ground so that it seems to belong to the dead, and is called the River of Death. When the gods used to make a promise which they did not dare to break, they said, "I promise by the Styx." This promise was called the Great Oath of the Gods. Farther on in the land of Arcadia, there is a vale called Stymphalus. It lies among the mountains and is open to the storms of winter and the floods of spring. And there are a lake and a city, both called Stymphalus. The people of Athens hope to carry the water of this lake to Athens by means of an underground channel. All about the lake are hills covered with firs and plane trees. Lake Stymphalus was the home of a countless number of birds which held noisy meetings in the woods. They had iron claws, and their feathers were sharper than arrows. They were so strong and fierce that they dared attack men, and would tear them to pieces that they might feast upon human flesh. They bore a striking resemblance to the harpies, and were the terror of all the people who lived near Stymphalus. Eurystheus ordered Hercules to drive the birds away. So Hercules took his bow and quiver and went to the lake. But the forests were so dense that he could not see the birds, and he sat down to think of the best way to drive them out. Suddenly, the goddess of wisdom came to him to help him. The goddess gave him a huge rattle and told him how to use it. Hercules went up onto the highest mountain that lies near the lake and shook the rattle with a will. The birds were so frightened by the noise that they came out of the thick wood where their nests were and flew high up into the air. Their heavy feathers fell like flakes in a driving snowstorm. Hercules shot at the birds with his arrows. He killed a great many of them, and the rest were so scared that they flew away and were never seen again at Stymphalus. Chapter 9. The Seventh Labor. Hercules catches the mad bull of Crete. There is an island south of Greece which is so large that it would take you from early morning until late at night to sail past it. There are high mountains all along the shore, and they look as if they were covered with snow. There is a cave in one of the mountains where Zeus was hidden when he was a babe, so that his father, Cronos, should not swallow him. The nymphs fed him on honey, and a famous goat gave him milk. The name of this island was Crete, and Minos ruled there as king. It was his duty to sacrifice to Poseidon, the god of the sea, whatever came up out of the water. Minos was rich and greedy. He loved his cattle better than the will of the gods. It came to pass that a wonderful bull rose from the sea while Minos was king. When Minos saw him, he admired the beauty of the animal so much that he resolved to keep him. He drove the bull into his barn and sacrificed another to the god of the sea. Poseidon grew angry with him and caused the bull to become mad, so that no one dared to approach him. Eurystheus ordered Hercules to catch him and bring him to Mycenae. So Hercules went to Crete and begged Minos to give him the bull. The king told him that he was entirely welcome to the bull if he could catch him. Hercules seized him by the horns and bound his feet together and carried him off to Mycenae. There he showed the mad animal to Eurystheus and then set him free. The bull wandered off to Sparta and over the hills of Arcadia and crossing the isthmus. He reached Marathon, where he left the land and swam off into the sea. Chapter 10. The Eighth Labor. The Horses of Diomedes. Greece was bounded on the north by a wild and mountainous land called Thrace. The natives were not of Greek stock and remained fierce, lawless, and cruel for a long time after Greece had become the most civilized of countries. They were so quarrelsome and such desperate fighters that their country was supposed to be the favorite residence of the war god Ares. The king who reigned in Thrace at the time of Hercules was so much worse than the rest of the people that he was said to be Ares' own son. And he was called the Storm King. He was very fond of horses and kept a breed of them after his own heart. They were man-eating horses, which he fed on the flesh of any strangers who came to that country or that were wrecked on the shore, thus breaking the most sacred laws and making himself hated by men and gods. The horses were bloody thirsty and so furious that they had to be chained to their stalls. Eurystheus commanded Hercules to bring these horses to his stables in Mycenae. This time Hercules took several friends with him, who helped him catch the horses and lead them to the shore. Diomedes, having heard of the robbery, started in pursuit with many armed men. Hercules and his friends went by sea. They attacked the guards and led the horses down to the ship. A terrible battle followed in which the wicked king was slain by Hercules, who threw him as food to the horses. The warriors who helped Diomedes were put to flight, and some of Hercules' best men were also killed. With the rest, he drove the horses into his ship and brought them safely to Mycenae. Eurystheus, of course, had no intention of keeping them in his stables and had them set loose. They ran off into the forests of Arcadia and were never seen again. It was thought that they were devoured by the mountain wolves. Chapter 11. The Ninth Labor. The Girdle of Hippolyte. Eurysithes, as we have seen, sent Hercules a little farther every time in hopes of never seeing him again. It would take you a whole day going on the best steamer to get to Crete from Athens, and in those days, when steamers had not been thought of, the sailing must have been slow indeed. Eurysithes now sent the hero yet farther off to the Black Sea, on the southern shore of which there lived the Amazons, a nation of warlike women. The Amazons were brought up like men. Their main occupation was war, and they were excellent horsewomen. They were sharpshooters with a bow and arrows. Hippolyte, the queen of the Amazons, was a brave and handsome woman. She wore a celebrated girdle, the gift of Ares, as a sign of her queenly rank. Eurysithes had a daughter who had heard of the beauty of the famous girdle which was worn by the Amazon queen. She begged her father to send Hercules to bring it to her. Then Eurysithes ordered Hercules to fetch the girdle, and he manned a ship and sailed away, taking several companions with him. After many wanderings, they reached the Black Sea and sailed to the Amazon country. Queen Hippolyte was at once informed that some strangers had arrived from a far-off land, and she came down to the shore to learn why they had come. Hercules told her that a princess had sent him to get the girdle given her by Ares. Hippolyte admired the bold hero for his frankness and promised that she would give it to him. But Hera changed herself into an Amazon, and rushing into the midst of an army of them, cried out, "The strangers are carrying off our queen!" Then all the Amazons snatched up their arms and rushed on horseback to the ship. When Hercules saw them coming, armed to attack his men, he thought Hippolyte had betrayed him, and he slew her and took the girdle. Then he attacked the rest of the Amazons and put them to flight. When the battle was over, Hercules and his companions went on board the ship and sailed for home. Soon after they had started on their way to Mycenae, they found Hyoscine, the daughter of Laomedon, on the shore chained to a rock. Laomedon was at that time king of Troy, and Hercules and his companions stopped to find out why the daughter of a great king had to suffer such a terrible punishment. She told Hercules that Apollo, the sun god, and Poseidon, the god of the sea, once took on the form of man and began to build walls around the city of Troy. Her father promised to aid them, but neglected to keep his promise. This conduct made the gods indignant, and Apollo sent a pestilence to rage in the city, while Poseidon sent a sea monster which came up out of the ocean and devoured the people. Laomedon asked the priest of Apollo how he might appease the wrath of the gods. The priest answered that the city would be freed from the double plague if Laomedon would chain his daughter to the rock on the shore, where the monster might devour her. Laomedon obeyed the oracle and had her chained to the cliff near the sea. Just then Hercules arrived and stopped near the shore. When Laomedon, with hot tears, entreated him to save his daughter, Hercules promised to do it under the condition that Laomedon should give him as a reward a famous horse in his possession. Hercules killed the sea monster. But Laomedon again did not keep his promise, and Hercules left Troy, his heart filled with scorn for the faithless king. On his return to Mycenae, he gave the girdle of the Amazon queen to his cousin, the daughter of Eurysithes. Chapter 12. The Tenth Labor, the Cattle of Geryon. Iberia, now called Spain, lies at the farthest end of Europe, and beyond it, in the Atlantic, is an island which was once the home of Geryon, a famous giant. His body was as large around as three other men's bodies put together. He had three heads and three pairs of legs and six arms. He had huge wings also and carried dangerous weapons. Geryon was the lord of many herds of cattle. He had one herd of red oxen, as red as the sky at the setting of the sun, and they were guarded by a trusty herdsman and a fierce two-headed dog. Eurysithes ordered Hercules to bring the cattle to Mycenae. Hercules, having overcome numberless difficulties, wandering through wild deserts and unknown lands, finally reached the open ocean, the end of all. There he erected as a monument two pillars opposite each other, one on the African shore and one in Europe. These were called the Pillars of Hercules in those days, but now they are known as the Rocks of Ceuta and Gibraltar. Helios, the sun, admiring the bravery of Hercules, lent him his golden skiff, shaped like a cup. Helios always sailed round the world every night, from west to east in this cup, and Hercules, although he feared a storm, took his place in the strange boat and started for the island where Geryon tended his red cattle. The world, as the Greeks saw it, was in the form of a great plate, and the ocean was a river surrounding it as the rim surrounds the plate. When the two-headed dog saw Hercules, he rushed at him with fury, and the herdsmen also attacked him at the same time. Hercules slew them both with his club, took the cattle, and fled toward the boat. Then Geryon sprang upon him and forced him to fight for his life. They had a dreadful battle, in which Hercules drew his bow and shot at the giant with one of his deadly arrows, and Geryon died. Hercules at once drove the oxen down to the boat, and after a safe voyage landed them in Iberia. Then he started for home on foot, driving his cattle northward over the Pyrenees into Gaul or France. Here he was attacked by hundreds of people who wanted to rob him of his cattle. Hercules shot at them with his arrows and killed great numbers, and they stoned him in return with large stones. Hercules would have lost the battle, but Zeus sent down a shower of rocks of vast size, and Hercules hurled them at his foes, driving them away like frightened sheep. These enormous rocks are still to be seen in the south of France. After this adventure, Hercules drove his cattle over the Alps and down into Italy across the Tiber, and they came to the seven hills of Rome. In one of these hills there was a cave, the home of a lawless giant named Cacus. He was a creature of iron strength and was hideously ugly. He breathed out fire and smoke, often killing people in this way, and everybody in all the country about feared him. Cacus saw Hercules coming with his cattle over the river and among the hills, and he determined to steal the cattle and hide them in his den. So when Hercules was asleep and the cattle were grazing quietly, Cacus slipped out of his cave and, seizing great numbers of them by the tails, dragged them backward into the cavern that their tracks might point away from the cave and not toward it. When Hercules awoke, he missed his cattle and began to look for them. He found their tracks and went in the direction they seemed to point out, getting farther and farther from their place of hiding. The oxen bellowed, and their noises were muffled by the rocks of the cavern, but Hercules heard them and returned to the seven hills. Listening intently, he traced them to the right hill, but Cacus had braced a stone slab against the opening, and it would not be moved from the outside. Hercules went around to the other side of the hill, and tearing the stones away, forced a new entrance. He sprang into the cave and seized the terrible monster by the throat. Cacus blew flames into the hero's face and tried to burn him to death, but Hercules held on and strangled the giant to death. A volume of black smoke came from his mouth and a stream of melted lead as he fell back dead. Hercules tore the slab from the door of the cave and threw the body of Cacus out on the hill. And all the people came to see it and rejoice that their foe was slain. And they built an altar to Hercules and instituted games to be held every year in his honor. Hercules left the seven hills and drove his cattle southward. Being tired, he lay down to rest on a mountain near Locri. And the grasshoppers came around him, singing in such shrill tones that he could not sleep. He prayed to the gods to drive them away, and the gods swept them out of that region so that they never came back. One of the wild oxen ran away to the southwest and escaped to an island. Hercules followed, driving the whole herd over to the island. The cattle swam across, and Hercules, sitting on the back of one of the oxen and holding on by its horns, was safely taken over. He captured the runaway and wandered for a long time through the island, enjoying the fresh water of the springs and the kindness of the people. Then he drove his cattle back to Italy and passed up the shores of the Ionian Sea. But Hera sent gadflies to make the cattle wilder than they were before, and they scattered over the mountain heights as clouds are scattered by a hot wind. They fled far to the east until they came to Thrace. There Hercules gathered together as many as he could and brought them to Mycenae, where Eurystheus sacrificed them to Hera. Chapter 13. The 11th Labor. The Golden Apples of Hesperides. When the wedding between Zeus and Hera was celebrated, all the gods brought presents. Mother Earth brought some apple trees as her gift. These trees bore precious golden apples, and Zeus and Hera were so pleased with their wonderful wedding present that they appointed four maidens, called Daughters of the West, to guard the apples, and also they placed a dragon there with 100 heads, who never slept. The fruit was so inviting that even the maidens would have been tempted to eat it if the terrible dragon had not kept close to the tree. A roar like thunder came out of each of his 100 mouths and frightened everything away that dared approach the trees, and lightning darted from his eyes to strike down intruders. The trees grew more and more beautiful from year to year, and the apples were so heavy that the boughs bent beneath the golden load. They grew in the garden of Hesperides, in islands way off to the west, and were watered by springs of nectar, which had their rise near the throne of Zeus. Eurystheus had heard of the apples, and he ordered Hercules to bring them to him. For a long time Hercules wandered about in various lands until he came to the river Rhone, where the water goddesses, or nymphs, advised him to ask counsel from the ancient lord of the deep sea, who knew all the secrets of the ocean depths, and whose wisdom was beyond that of the gods. He is called by many names, but his gentlest name is Nereus, and he does not like to be questioned unless he can take any shape he pleases. He usually escapes intruders, but to those who are not afraid and who manage to grasp and to hold him, he freely opens the store of his wisdom. This was what Hercules did. Nereus took on the form of a lion, a serpent, a fish, a stream of water, and at last of an old man. But Hercules held him close and learned from him the road to the garden of the Hesperides. Leaving Nereus, Hercules traveled south into Africa, where he met Antaeus, a huge giant who lived in the desert. Antaeus was a son of earth and ocean, and he was as strong as the terrible sandstorms. He was cruel to all travelers who crossed his domains and slew them, but he loved and protected the tiny pygmies that lived all around him. No one had ever been able to vanquish him in battle, for Mother Earth gave him new strength and vigor every time he lay down or touched the ground. Hercules wrestled with him and threw him down many times, but Antaeus sprang up stronger than ever. At last Hercules caught him up with one hand and, holding him high in the air where he could not receive help from Mother Earth, squeezed him to death. Hercules was tired out with this tremendous exertion and lay down in the desert to rest. But he did not sleep long, for a whole army of little people, seeing their beloved giant lying dead, came with their weapons to attack Hercules. He found himself covered with them from head to foot. He sprang up and, quickly gathering up his lion's skin, crushed a multiple of the pygmies and killed them. Then he hurried away toward the east, going through many countries until he came to India, and, finding himself traveling in the wrong direction, turned to the north and west and came to the Caucasus Mountains, where he found Prometheus chained to the rocks of a high mountain peak. Prometheus had taught mankind the use of fire, and how to build houses, and had otherwise interfered with the work of the gods, thereby bringing him this punishment upon himself, Hercules took pity on him and set him free. In return for this kindly act, Prometheus told him the most direct way to the garden of the Hesperides, which was through Scythia and the region of the Hyperboreans at the back of the north wind. On his way, Hercules stopped to visit Atlas, who, as a punishment for once having rebelled against the gods, was obliged to carry the heavens on his shoulders. "Let me relieve thee for a while, friend Atlas," said Hercules, after greeting him in a most cordial manner. "Let me take the heavens on my shoulders, and I will let thee do me a great service in return. I must have the golden apples that grow in the garden of Hesperides to take to Eurystheus, and thou canst bring them to me." Atlas gladly placed the heavy firmament on Hercules' shoulders and took his way to the garden. There he contrived to put the many-headed dragon to sleep and then slay him. Taking possession of the golden apples, he returned with them to Hercules. "I thank thee very much, friend Atlas," said Hercules. "Take thy place again and give me the apples." "Nay, I have borne the weight of the heavens for a long time," answered Atlas. "Thou hadst better keep my place, and I will carry the golden apples to Eurystheus." Hercules was taken aback at this reply and began to consider how he might escape from this unexpected dilemma. At last he spoke. "Very well, I will willingly remain in thy place, friend Atlas," he said. "One thing only I must first ask of thee. Take the heavens back just for a moment while I get a pad to put on my head so that the weight may not hurt it. Otherwise, the heavens will fall and crush us both." Poor, simple old Atlas agreed to this, and, putting the golden apples on the ground, he again took the firmament on his shoulders. Hercules picked up the apples and went off, saying, "We must not bear malice toward each other, friend Atlas. Goodbye." With this, he departed and hastened back to Mycenae. Chapter 14. The Twelfth Labor. Hercules Fetches Cerberus Out of Hades. According to the terms of the doom that was laid upon Hercules, the performance of the last task was to free him from Eurystheus. 11 were now fulfilled, and the tyrant's heart failed him when he thought of what he might expect at the hands of the hero he had used so ill when once he was free from his power. Cowards always fear those whom they have ill-treated. So he determined to send Hercules on an errand from which he thought he could not possibly return. He had come back unharmed from every known and unknown country on the face of the earth. But who was ever known to return alive from the land of the dead? So Eurystheus, as a last task, ordered him to go down to Hades and bring out alive Cerberus, the three-headed dog that guards the entrance to the lower world, feeling sure that Hercules would remain forever in Hades. Cerberus was a terrible monster. Besides having three heads, he had a tail which ended in a serpent's head, and all along his spine he had serpent's heads instead of hair. His duty was to see that no dead should escape from Hades after once entering its gates. There was a long, dark cave leading down to Hades, and the river Stack flowed across it. A white-haired old ferryman, Charon by name, waited with his boat on the shore to carry the spirits of all who died. There they were met by Minos, the great judge, who told them whether they could go into the fields of the blessed or whether they were doomed to the region of the unhappy. Charon's boat was but a delicate skiff, and adapted only to carrying souls without bodies, so Hercules was not a welcome passenger. Hercules found his way into Hades in spite of all of the difficulties, and presenting himself to Pluto, the king of the dead, begged him to give him the dog. Pluto replied, Take him and lead him out into the world, and thou shalt have him. But thou must not use any weapon. Hercules answered, I will use no weapon but my hands, and with them alone I will conquer him. Wearing his breastplate and clad in the lion's skin, he approached Cerberus, who stood on guard at the gates. He threw his arms around the dog's three heads and pressed them with all his might. The dog fought with great fury and bit him with the snake's mouth, which he had at the end of his tail. Hercules threw his lion skin over the head of the dog and dragged him out by another gate into the daylight. Cerberus had never seen the light of the sun and was frightened beyond measure. He foamed at the mouth, and wherever the foam fell upon the ground, it caused a poisonous plant to grow. Hercules took Cerberus to Eurystheus, who was not pleased to see the dog or the hero. Then he carried him back to Hades and restored him to Pluto. And so were the 12 great labors ended. Adapted by Mary E. Burt and Zen Aidi A. Ragozin.